Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We have a lot to share. Going to talk about fish oils again, how calcium can help you live a longer life. Also, the dietary exposure to plastics, well, they can really increase a child's susceptibility to having hyperactivity. The American public, no matter what we offer, are still making unhealthy choices. That's according to the CDC. I'll go into that and give you my thoughts on that as well. And a Swedish review strengthens the conclusions that radiation from cellular and cordless phones is a human carcinogen. Also from our environmental segment today, a commentary from Michael Schneider of Economic Collapse about the Colorado River, the High Plains Aquifer, where I was driving recently. And beautiful shots. In fact, some of those shots I put up on my website for you. And the entire western half of the United States. What about the entire western half of the United States? I'll tell you about that. The Obama administration officially approves an ALEC, that's the American Legislative Council, Exchange Council, a model bill for fracking. ALEC wrote the bill, Obama supporting it, about not having to release full disclosure on the chemicals that go into public lands. Wow. It's a 171-page document. They actually acknowledge that it's from the American Legislative Council. They're not even hiding the fact that they are virtually allowing everyone with money to line up to give them the money and to write the laws. 800 scientists from around the world agree GM crops are bad to the bone and nothing short of, quote, bio-war on our food. Summer tyranny. We'll talk about that. Then I found a piece of research. What a piece of research. Wow. It's from a group of scientists from the Department of Sociology, Boston University, Massachusetts General Hospital, also Harvard University, Radcliffe University. And where do you hear the conclusions? I'll share it with you. This is the only place in the world you're going to know this exists because it's not exposed. Japanese scientists should be exposed. I'll tell you about that, what they did that was really bad. And from Tom Hartman. Tom, your article, The Corporate Dictatorship of PBS and NPR, it's incorrect. I'll share an alternative opinion since I'm on PBS and I know how to get stuff on there. And maybe that'll give you a different perspective. Fresh water shortages everywhere. Countercurrents. And then it's back in the news. Extreme solar storms could cause widespread disruption of Earth. From space.com, this is, you know, mainstream. And they're even more strong than I am on this. Why is it we're not paying attention to the riots in Sweden? Possibly because they're not based upon an ethical clash or an ethnic clash. They're based upon what happens when there's massive unemployment in young people. Not a word in the American media. My major commentary today is going to be based upon America's bubble, and I'm going to give you several perspectives of why you cannot trust what is being told about our economy being good and jobs back. It isn't. Everything in America right now concerning our economics and Wall Street is a bubble, a financial bubble. And then time, I am going to make time for this because Jeffrey St. Clair is quite simply one of the finest, most articulate spokespersons for the left. But on this, Jeffrey, I'm asking you to consider an alternative. The silent death of the American left. Generation Leftover, by Jeffrey St. Clair, my counter-commentary challenging him today. So we have a lot of serious, interesting, important, but always empowering issues. That's the underlying concept. Even if you hear something you may consider negative, like the Colorado River and the High Plains aquifers and the entire western half of the United States drying up, it's not bad if you become empowered by it and are able to make positive changes. That's like a person saying, I've got pains all over my body, I can't get up in the morning, my eyes are swollen shut, but I'm not going to go be diagnosed because I'm afraid of the consequences. And there are others who say, the moment something's wrong, I want to know about it so I can change it. Let's begin. We're about change. Diabetes is simply one of the easiest diseases I've ever worked with to reverse completely. No more diabetes. This is from Harvard School of Public Health, published in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. Quote, widely used fish oil supplements modestly increase the amount of a hormone that is associated with lowering the risk of diabetes and heart disease. Fish oil supplements, also called omega-3 fatty acid capsules, raise levels of an important hormone beneficial on metabolic processes like glucose regulation and modulation of inflammation. So the omega-3 fatty acids do work. And they analyzed 14 randomized placebo-controlled clinical trials and found it works. Now, mind you, I'm using Harvard School of Public Health, the Endocrine Society's official Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism, to talk about a hormone that has beneficial effects on metabolic processes that is improved with fish oil. So do you think that 900,000 doctors will begin to advise this for the nearly 90 million pre-diabetic and diabetic patients? Not on your life. Do you believe that the quackbusters, those simple fools that have disconnected from all reality and are nothing more than propagandists for the corporate interest and the pharmaceutical interest, do you think that they're going to suggest this? Not at all. But you will use it because it's common sense and it works. The link between calcium supplements and longer lifespan in women. This is from McGill University in Montreal, published in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. Quote, taking calcium supplements of up to 1,000 milligrams per day can help women live longer. I repeat, 1,000 milligrams a day of calcium can help women live longer. That is terrific. Now, of course, calcium, this audience knows, is an essential nutrient for bone health. Now, the American public thinks they're getting calcium from dairy products. They are, but it's not readily absorbed because it doesn't have boron, it doesn't have manganese, phosphorus, and magnesium in the right quantity in order for it to be absorbed. So the lie is, get your calcium from dairy. Well, it's different saying, is there calcium in dairy? The answer is yes. Is it easily absorbable? The answer is no. So this was good. One more article on the omega-3 fatty acids. This is from Michigan Technological University. And this is from published in the American Journal of Physiology, Regulatory, Integrative, and Complementary Physiology. The title of the article is Fish Oil and Neurovascular Reactivity in Mental Stress in Humans. Quote, fish oil can counteract the detrimental effects of mental stress on the heart. Now, why is this important? In lay language, we know that the hormones that are elevated when you're stressed, like cortisol, attack heart tissue. We know that that can kill you, hence stress can kill. So they're saying that the fish oil protects your heart when you're stressed. So how about that? Now, there was an article that also showed that fish oil can help with prostate cancer. In fact, it lowers your risk for a man developing prostate cancer. We also know that it helps from the University of Connecticut School of Nursing, and Dr. Michelle Price Judge showed that it could help postnatal depression. We also know that it helps people who are younger people in particular who have behavioral problems like ADHD. We also know that fish oil helps protect for vision loss, healthy fetus, It does all these wonderful things. Now, there was an article that was published recently in the New England Journal of Medicine that was supposed to have been the kiss of death about fish oils and the heart. And it said there was no difference in survival between the placebo and the fish oil. And I said, that's not possible. Can't be. I've seen all the studies. I've seen all the people I work with, because I had the people I work with get very, very comprehensive blood workups from the finest accredited laboratories. So I see when their homocysteine level comes down, inflammation in the heart turns off. I see all this. And I've seen 1,000 studies. So I knew that something was wrong. And sure enough, it's right there in plain sight. First, who financed the study? Pfizer, a major pharmaceutical company that produces statin drugs for the heart, and two other French companies that are pharmaceutical companies with heart medication. Secondly, this is the kind of science that if any of my students at Fairleigh Dickinson had ever given me, they would have gotten their paper back and say, start over, this is all wrong. All you had to do is look at the study design. A placebo must be an inert, inactive sugar pill. It wasn't. They used olive oil. What are the two powerful components of olive oil? Both fatty acid that work identical to fish oil. That's why the Mediterranean diet is so healthy, because of olives and olive oil as a major component of it. So when you test two groups and you say one's placebo, but then the key, the real red flag was the people did not die as expected, as early as expected. Oh, you mean they live longer? Well, of course they did, because they were both taking omega fatty acids. That's why. And finally, but this is the nonsense, and I can assure you, I can promise you, that none of the science or health writers would have found this, and they would have gone ahead and said, fish oil's non-effective for heart disease, which meant keep taking your statins and your meds. They wouldn't have found out who financed it and what conflict of interest there was there, and they wouldn't have found that the placebo was not a sugar pill, but another fatty acid with equal healing power as the omega-3 fatty acids. You're getting DHA in both. I can't tell you the disdain I have for all the American media, all of it. No, but I'm sure many of you also have found the biases yourself. You didn't need anyone to point them out. Plastic, it's everywhere, but there's a problem with it. The chemicals that are in the plastic, phthalates. Phthalates are odorless, they're colorless, and they're ubiquitous. You can find them in plastic cups and plastic wrap. According to the CDC, they're in the body of most Americans. Now, we were told for a long time that the phthalates were harmless. They're not. There's an enormous amount of evidence now that they can leach from the packaging and mix with food. Well, think of the people that then put something into a plastic container to have it microwaved, cooked. That in turn can leach them into the food which gets into the body, and that can cause significant metabolic and hormonal abnormalities, especially during early development. An article published in the Journal of Pediatrics suggests that certain types of phthalates could pose another risk to children, compromising heart health. And they looked at this latest study and found out that those children that had the greatest exposure had problems with their heart. Also, the CDC says that most Americans are still making bad choices. The question is why? Higher rates of obesity than ever before, drinking. We've never consumed as much alcohol as we're doing now. Smoking, inactivity, laziness. Why? They don't know. Well, why don't we speculate? And why don't you call in and you explain on the air your thoughts on our talkback segment in a few moments. which is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Why, with all of the health information in all forms that is available regularly, why are we choosing, and mind you, it is a choice, to do unhealthy things? What are your thoughts? I'd like to hear yours before I share mine. The latest study out of Sweden shows that of the 5.9 billion people using mobile phones, they represent, quote, a new, ubiquitous, and rapidly growing exposure worldwide. Mobile phones are two-way microwave radios that also emit low levels of electromagnetic radiation, and they are a carcinogen. So then the question is, how much money will the pro-industry people spend through think tanks, foundations, doctors, and scientists for hire that will tell you not true? Look at the 22 studies, all independent, that show you you're going to increase your rate of brain cancer. Then look at the upcoming studies that are all industry-supported, just like the tobacco industry did to try to tell you that smoking wasn't bad, or drinking's not bad, or sugar's not bad. There's an industry and group out there to protect it. Who are you going to trust? Now, on to some other issues. From our public health issue today, I found an article. The article's titled, "The Questionable Contribution of Medical Measures to the Decline in Mortality in the United States in the 20th Century." Authors are John B. McKinley and Sonia McKinley, Department of Sociology, Boston University, Massachusetts General Hospital, Department of Mathematics, Boston University, and Radcliffe Institute and Harvard University. Let me quote the conclusion of this. It says a lot. In conclusion, quote, "In general, medical measures appear to have contributed little to the overall decline in mortality in the United States since about 1900, having in so many instances been introduced several decades after a market decline had already set in and having no detectable influence in most instances. More specifically, with reference to those five conditions, influenza, pneumonia, diphtheria, whooping cough, and poliomyelitis, for which the decline in mortality appears substantially after the point of intervention, and on the unlikely assumption that all this decline is attributable to the intervention, it is estimated that most 3.5% of the total decline in death since 1900 could be ascribed to medical measures introduced for the disaster considered herein. These conclusions in support of this thesis," and then it goes on to talk about why it's so profound. This is about vaccines. They're writing about how vaccines that have been given the full credit for getting rid of major epidemics did not. At most, 3%, 3.5% total decline. Well, that's nothing. It was in the lifestyle, because most of the declines came before the vaccine was even introduced. But it's interesting to find, this was published in Columbia Journal Review. This is remarkable. So that's good news to know that there are those who have written something historically that shed light on the fallacy of what we're now reintroducing, the lack of legitimate science on public health measures. Now to our environmental segment. I'm going to go through several of these in quick succession. I've been explaining that we're running out of drinking water, clean water, and abundant water. And some places are already out of that water. If you traveled with me and you drove through Colorado and Utah and Wyoming and Montana and other places I have driven, you'll see lots of farms are for sale. And you look at them and think, wow, that's a beautiful meadow and big farm. More often than not, they're selling because their wells are dry. And these people need the wells in order to irrigate the land, to grow grasses, or for crops. Either way, they're out of water. And now there's six states that are permanently out of water. I mean, they're gone as far as their water for human and agriculture usage, and it's just a matter of the final now in the next 5-10 years, Colorado and New Mexico, Nevada, Oklahoma, Indiana, Kansas. This is where a lot of food is grown. So I'm just giving you a heads up. This is from Michael Snyder, and it's entitled The Colorado River, the High Plains Aquifer, and the entire western half of the United States are rapidly drying up. I'll quote this. What is life going to look like as our precious water resources become increasingly strained and the western half of the United States becomes bone dry? We have built teeming cities in the desert, such as Phoenix and Las Vegas, that support millions of people. Cities all over the Southwest continue to grow, even as the Colorado, Lake Mead, and the High Plains aquifer systems run dry. So what are we going to do when there isn't enough water to irrigate our crops or run through our water system? Already we are seeing some ominous signs that dust bowl conditions are starting to return to the region. In the past couple of years, we have seen giant dust storms known as Habubs roll through Phoenix in 6 of the 10 worst years for wildfires ever recorded in the United States have all come in the last 12 years. In fact, according to the Los Angeles Times, quote, the average number of fires larger than 1,000 acres in a year has quadrupled in Arizona and Idaho and has doubled in every other western state, end quote. But scientists are warning that they expect the western United States to become much drier than it is now. What will the western half of the country look like once this happens? Much of the western half of the country has historically been desolate wasteland. We were very blessed to enjoy very wet conditions for most of the last century, but now that era is over. To compensate, we're putting a tremendous burden on our freshwater resources. In particular, the Colorado River is becoming increasingly strained. Without the Colorado River, many of our largest cities simply would not be able to function. The following is from a recent Stratford article. The Colorado River provides water for irrigation for roughly 15% of the crops in the United States, including vegetables, fruits, cotton, alfalfa, and hay. It also provides municipal water supplies for large cities like Phoenix, Tucson, Los Angeles, San Diego, and Las Vegas, accounting for more than half of the water supply in many of these areas. In particular, water levels in Lake Mead, which supplies most of the water for Las Vegas, have fallen dramatically over the past decade or so. The following is an excerpt from an article posted on Smithsonian.com. Quote, and boaters still roar across Nevada and Arizona's Lake Mead, 110 miles long, and formed by the Hoover Dam. But at the lake's edge, they can see lines in the rock walls, distinct as bubble rings, showing the water level far below what it once was, some 130 feet lower, as it happened since 2000. Water resource officials say some of the reservoirs fed by the river will never be full again. End quote. Today, Lake Mead supplies approximately 85% of the water that Las Vegas uses, and since 1998, the water level in Lake Mead has dropped by about 5.6 trillion gallons. So what happens if Lake Mead continues to dry up? Well, the truth is that it would be a major disaster. Quote, way before people run out of drinking water, something else happens. When Lake Mead falls below 1,050 feet, the Hoover Dam's turbines shut down. Less than 4 years from now. Let me repeat that. Less than 4 years from now, if the current trend holds. And in Vegas, the lights go out. Ominously, these water woes are not confined to Las Vegas. Under contracts signed by President Obama, Nevada gets only 23% of the electricity generated by the Hoover Dam. The other top recipients, Metropolitan Water District of Southern California, 28%, State of Arizona, 18%, City of Los Angeles, 15%, and Southern California Edison, 5%. You can always build more power plants, but you can't build more rivers, and the mighty Colorado carries the lifeblood of the Southwest. It services the water needs of an area the size of France, in which live 40 million people. In its natural state, the river poured 15 million per acre feet of water into the Gulf of Mexico each year. Today, 12 years of drought have reduced that flow to 12 million acre feet, and human demand siphons off every drop of it. The riverbed at its mouth is dust dry. Nor is the decline in the water supply important only to the citizens of Las Vegas, Phoenix, and Los Angeles. It's critical to the whole country. The Colorado is the sole source of water for southeastern California's Imperial Valley, which has been made into one of the most productive agriculture areas in the U.S. despite receiving an average of 3 inches of rain per year, end quote. When was the last time you heard about any of this in the major news? But the reality is that this is a slow-motion train wreck, and it's happening right in front of our eyes, and it's going to happen over the next 4 years. Today, the once mighty Colorado runs dry 50 miles north of the sea. The following is an excerpt from an excellent article by Jonathan Waterman about what he found when he went to investigate this. Quote, 50 miles from the sea, 1.5 miles south of the Mexican border, I saw a river evaporate into a scum of phosphates and discarded water bottles. This dirty water sent me home with feet so badly infected that I couldn't walk for a week. And a delta once renowned for its wildlife and wetlands is now all but part of the surrounding parched Sonoran Desert. According to Mexican scientists, when I met with, the river has not flowed to the sea since 1998. If the Endangered Species Act had any teeth in Mexico, we might have a chance to save the giant sea bass, clams, the Sea of Cortez shrimp fisheries that depends upon freshwater returns, and dozens of other species. So let this stand as an open invitation to the former Secretary of Interior and of all water buffaloes who insist upon telling us that there is no scarcity of water here or in the Mexican Delta. Leave the sprinkled green lawns outside of the Aspen conferences. Come with me and I'll show you a Colorado River running dry from its headwaters to the sea. It is polluted and compromised by industry and agriculture. It is over-allocated, drought-stricken, and soon to suffer greatly from population growth. If other leaders in our administration continue the whitewash, scarcity of knowledge and lack of conservation measures will cripple Western civilization built upon water. End quote. Further east, the major problem is the drying up of the underground water resources. In the state of Kansas today, that I just mentioned, many farmers that used to be able to pump plenty of water to irrigate their crops are discovering that the water underneath their land is now gone. The following is an excerpt from a recent article in the New York Times. Quote, vast stretches of Texas farmland lying over the aquifer no longer support agriculture. In western central Kansas, up to a fifth of the irrigated farmland along a 100-mile swath of the aquifer has already gone dry. In many other places, there is no longer enough water to supply farmers' peak needs during Kansas's scorching summers. And when the groundwater runs out, it's gone for good. Refilling the aquifer would require hundreds, if not thousands, of years of rain. End quote. So what's going to happen to the breadbasket of the world as this underground aquifer continues to dry up? I'm guessing that most of Americans, but certainly not this audience, have never heard of the Ogallala Aquifer, but it's one of our most important natural resources. It is one of the largest sources of fresh water on the entire planet. And farmers use water from the Ogallala Aquifer to irrigate more than 15 million acres of crop each year. It covers more than 100,000 square miles and sits underneath Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Colorado, Kansas, Nebraska, Wyoming, and South Dakota. Unfortunately, today it is being drained dry at a staggering rate. The aquifer is being drained at a rate of approximately 800 gallons per minute. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, quote, a volume equivalent to two-thirds of the water in Lake Erie has been permanently drained from the aquifer. Decades ago, the aquifer had an average depth of 240 feet, but today, 80 feet is all that's left. But in some areas of Texas, the water's gone completely. So exactly what do we plan to do when the water is gone? We don't plan anything. That's just not how we function in America today. And finally, before we take our break, two things. One on the environment, solar storms. This is from Miriam Kramer, and this is from space.com. Quote, if an extreme solar storm aimed at the Earth hits in just the right way, it could put interconnected electrical grids around the world at serious risk, according to experts. In addition to creating beautiful auroras, extreme solar storms could knock out a wide range of electric utilities needed to keep life in the United States and around the world functioning normally. According to presenters at the 4th Annual Electric Infrastructure Security Summit, quote, what a solar storm can do, even if it isn't causing a continental-scale outage, it can really cause a regional blackout, says the director of Laboratory for Atmospheric and Space Physics, the University of Colorado. Quote, imagine something like, for example, Superstorm Sandy. Imagine that kind of severe storm, but causing regional outages for weeks, living without power, really cascades and propagates the remarkable ways throughout our society. End quote. As the sun reaches the peak of its 11-year cycle this year, scientists expect the active regions of the star, known as sunspots, will erupt, flinging streams of charged particles out into the solar system. Relatively minor storms can also create temporary radio blackouts and disrupt GPS navigation. However, this doesn't necessarily mean that all solar eruptions will impact Earth. Most coronal mass ejections are not aimed towards the planet, instead shoot out harmlessly into other parts of the solar system. But once every century or so, an extreme solar storm is expected to impact the Earth. The last documented solar storm in this category is known as the Carrington event. Particles from powerful coronal mass ejections overload telegraph wires, setting paper machines on fire in 1859. These kinds of storms from the sun are notoriously difficult to predict. You bet. Takes about 2 to 4 days to get to the Earth. Needless to say, I will notify this audience because we're in communication daily to see what's actually happening. And so at least those who care will have a heads up, but we're in the midst of that right now. Now, I want to share a commentary and then a counter-commentary. This is from Jeffrey St. Clair, from his website, Counterpunch, and they do a lot of good work. Is there a left in America today? There is, of course, a left ideology, a left of the mind, a left of theory and critique, but is there a left movement? Does the left exist as an oppositional political, cultural, and economic force? Is anyone intimidated or restrained by the left? Is there a counterforce to the grinding machinery, neoliberal capitalism, and its political managers? But where is our capacity to confront the daily horrors of drone strikes, kill lists, mass layoffs, pension raids, and the looming nightmare of climate change? It is a bitter reality brought into vivid focus by 5 years of Obama that the left is an immobilized and politically impotent force at the very moment when the economic inequalities engineered by our overlords at Goldman Sachs, who manage the global economy, should have recharged a long, moribund resistance movement back to life. Instead, the left seems powerless to coalesce, to translate critique into practice, to mobilize against wars, to resist incursions against basic civil liberties, powerless to confront rule by the bondholders and hedge funders, unable to meaningfully obstruct the cutting edge of a parasitical economic system that glorifies greed while preying on the weakest and most destitute, and incapable of confronting the true legacy of the man they put in their trust. This is the politics of exhaustion. We have become a generation of leftovers. We have reached a moment of historical failure that would make even Nietzsche shudder. We stand on the margins, political exiles in our own country, in a kind of mute darkness, a political occlusion, increasingly obsessed, as the radical art historian Tim Clark put it in a few years ago in a disturbing essay in the New Left Review, with the tragedy of our own defeat. Consider this. Two-thirds of the American electorate opposed the ongoing war in Afghanistan. An equal amount objected to intervention in Libya. Even more recoil at the grim prospect of entering the Syrian theater. Yet there is no anti-war movement to translate that seething disillusionment into action. There is no mass demonstrations, no systematic effort to obstruct military recruiting, no nationwide strikes, no campus walkouts, no serious divestment campaigns against companies involved in drone technology. Similar proper disgust is evident regarding the imposition of stern austerity measures during a prolonged and invigorating recession. But once again, this smoldering outrage has no political outlet in the current political climate. Both parties have fully embraced the savage bottom-line math of neoliberalism. Homelessness rampant across America is a verbatim topic, unmentioned in the press, absent from the political discourse. Hunger, a deepening crisis in rural and urban America, is a taboo subject, something left to religious prey to eat charities or the fickle whims of corporate write-offs. What do they offer us instead? Pious homilies about the work ethic, the sanctity of family unit, the self-correcting laxative of market forces, the economic conditions of black America, brutal and unrelenting, is simply eluded, erased from the political dialogue, even at jam sessions of the Congressional Black Caucus. Instead, whenever Obama mentions the plight of black Americans, as he did in his patronizing commencement address this spring, it is to chide blacks about cleaning up their acts, admonishing them to stop complaining about their circumstances, work harder at adapting a flight plan of white corporate culture. The self-evident need for large-scale public works projects is to green the economy and put people to work goes unmentioned, while the press and the political elites engage in a faux debate over the minutiae of sequestration and the sharpened each other's knives to begin slashing Social Security and Medicare. Where's the collective outrage? Where are the marches on the Capitol, the sit-ins in congressional offices? A few weeks ago, I wrote an essay on the Obama administration's infamous memo justifying drone strikes inside countries like Pakistan and Yemen that the U.S. is not officially at war against. In one revealing paragraph, a Justice Department lawyer cited Richard Nixon's illegal bombing of Cambodia during the Vietnam War as a precedent for Obama's killer drone strikes. Let's recall that the bombing of Cambodia prompted several high-ranking officials in the Nixon cabinet to resign, including counterpunch writer Roger Morris. It also sparked the student uprising at Kent State, which led to Ohio Governor Jim Rhodes to declare a state of emergency, ordering the National Guard to rush to the campus. The Guard promptly began firing on protesters, killed 4 and wounded 9. The war had come home. Where are these protests today? The environment is unraveling, thread by thread, right before our eyes. Each day brings more dire news. Amphibians are in the stark decline across North America. Storms of unimaginable ferocity are strafing the Great Plains week after week. The Arctic will soon be ice-free. The water table is plummeting in the world's greatest aquifer. The air is carcinogenic in dozens of California cities. The spotted owl is still going extinct. Wolves are being gunned down by the hundreds across the Rocky Mountains. Bees, the great pollinators, are disappearing coast to coast, wiped out by chemical agriculture. Hurricane season now lasts from May to December, and about all the environmental movement can offer is resistance, in the form of resistance, or a few designer protests against a pipeline which is already a fait accompli. Our politics has gone sociopathic, and liberals in America have been pliant in every abuse, marinated in the toxic silt of Obama's mordant rhetoric. They eagerly swallow every placebo policy Obama serves them, dutifully defending every incursion against fundamental rights, and each betrayal only serves to make his adoring group crave his smile, his occasional glance nod all the more urgently. Still, others on the dogmatic left circle endlessly, like characters consigned to their eternal roles of Dante in the ideological cul-de-sac of identity politics. How much will we stomach before rising up? A fabricated war? A looted economy? A scalded atmosphere? A despoiled Gulf? The loss of habeas corpus? The assassination of American citizens? One looks in vain across this vast landscape of despair for even the dimmest flickers of real rebellion and popular unity. As if surveying a nation of zombies, we remain strangely impassive in the face of our extinction. End quote. Those are your thoughts, Jeffrey, and we certainly appreciate your honor to to your liberal causes. But I do not see things as bleak. And I believe that you are correct. The left is dead. They are complicit. They are part of the problem. The Clinton liberal Democrat, the Obama liberal Democrat, has nothing in common with the Roosevelt populist Democrat. But here's the good news. What the entire left couldn't do, and none of the non-commercial radio stations that posture themselves as political elitists guarding the values of liberalism could even muster the organizational skill, yet let alone the dynamic, to get put 2 million people on Saturday. But grassroots did. And they weren't liberal. They were independent thinking and progressive-minded people who saw the dangers of genetically modified foods. Quote from Associated Press, millions march against genetically modified crops. We celebrated across the country and across the world. 436 cities in the United States and 52 countries. How about that? Millions. And which major organization, which 350 Bill McKibben? No. No. Which the Sierra Club, you know, no. Just one person. And we all were there to support this. But we also, Jeffrey, we helped stop mandatory vaccination in New York State on healthcare workers when we, independent and progressives, met on the governor's office and at the Capitol. Thousands stood out front of the governor's office saying, close down nuclear power. But I ask, how many are here from BAI? And outside of Michael G. Haskins, not a single hand. And marching on Washington, 10,000 strong. It wasn't the liberals who were doing it. It was independent. You made the mistake of thinking that anyone who protests, if it's not sanctioned by the left, must be a nut job. Think again. We're the ones who are helping stop the fracking movement, or at least bringing voice to it and protest. Genetic engineering, protesting, and it's gone worldwide. And there are many of us. Jeffrey Smith and Dana Shiva. Many people. Here's what we're for, and here's what we're actually able to do. We're actually identifying corporations that are supportive of the individuals who we believe should be boycotted. So we believe that the best way to fight is to actually boycott. Don't buy their products. Monsanto companies do not buy from Aunt Jemima, Aurora Foods, Banquet, Best Foods, Betty Crocker, Bisquick, Cadbury, Campbell's, Capri Sun, Carnation, Chef Boyardee, Coca-Cola, ConAgra, Delicious Brand Cookies, Duncan Hines, Famous Amos, Frito-Lay, General Mills, Green Giant, Healthy Choice, Heinz, Hellman, Hershey's Nestle, Hunt's, Interstate Bakeries, Jiffy, Kentucky Fried Masterpiece, Keebler, Kellogg's, Kid Cuisine, Kool-Aid, Kraft Philip Morris, Unilever, Uncle Ben's, Stouffer's, Smart Ones, Rice-A-Roni, Pringles, Power Bar Brand, Post Cereals, Ocean Spray, Nature Valley, Nabisco's, Miss Butterworth's, Morningstar, Minute Aid, Loma Linda, Lipton, and Lean Cuisine. That's how we do it. We stop buying their products. We write letters to our legislators saying, if you at the state level meet with an ALEC at any time, we're going to vote you out of office. It's different how independent and progressive minds work. We work based upon not a political ideology, but rather upon an ethics of what is right. The left is dead. It's an embarrassment because it didn't change. It didn't see what was in front of it. Here are what those who are progressive are doing. Here's why The Nation magazine should be on the list of banned. Because it supported this president, by extension, their policies, even though they will have individual writers who will take issue with certain parts of it. Overall, they still empower them. When asked, Jill Stein, Rocky Anderson, and Gary Johnson all agreed, along with Dennis Kucinich, to challenge all that is corporate. And they did not mince words, and they did not equivocate. Here's what we support: a concerted effort to rein in the fossil fuel industry's influence over energy policy and to begin an aggressive transition from reliance upon fossil fuels to renewable clean energy technology. Cut off every single penny of allowance and any subsidies, corporate welfare to every major corporation, including all the energy cartels. Reduce natural gas fracking and eliminate it. Veto the Keystone Tar Pipeline. Reduce all subsidies immediately. Stop this idea that there is clean nuclear power. There is not. Instead, increase solar, wind, hydro, and thermal energies. Strengthen rather than limit freedom of speech, including the cessation of government surveillance and opposition to truth, a truly independent and progressive media. Strengthen the public protection from government surveillance of emails, mobile phones, and websites. High-level review with independent scholars on the truth behind the war on terrorism. Restoration of the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878 that would forbid the U.S. military and Department of Defense from deploying troops on the state and city's security and to wage war against Americans who expressed dissension from government policies. Increase check and balances to prevent state, county, and city law enforcement from being usurped under the Department of Defense and Homeland Security. Increase transparency and accountability across the three branches of government and encourage whistleblowers to come forth and reveal illegal activities. Most importantly, I suggest that we have a truth and reconciliation on this. Any government employee, any person with any major corporation that comes forward and tells us the truth about illegal acts would be not prosecuted and not fined. See how many people come forward then. Also, completely repeal the Patriot Act, the National Defense Authorization Act, and withdraw all policies that would detain American citizens indefinitely on suspicion of terrorism affiliation. Return to constitutional law to prevent the civil court system adopting military legal practices. I would suggest that we have an independent evaluation of the adverse effects of the nation through conflict of interest through corporate powers and government legislation. Full investigations in the corruption of the private prison system and the congressional reevaluation of the long-term adverse effects of prison privatization. Completely eliminate the war on drugs and set free all who have been incarcerated because of that. Reining in and limiting the influence of power of corporate lobbying groups. Make all lobbying illegal. Make all funding for any election illegal. Full transparency of all trade agreements and repeal NAFTA, GATT, and remove ourselves from the World Trade Organization. Have a national single-payer or universal health care program. Strengthen all protections of health freedom choices. A complete cessation of mandatory health care policies that reduce health freedom choices. Limit the influence of medical insurance industry and federal health care policy. Congressional evaluation and independent evaluation of psychiatry as an industry's assault on mental health. Completely abolish the FDA and put independent scientific review commission in its place. Mandatory labeling of all genetically modified food or products. Single term of 3 years for any politician never be allowed to represent again. No representative of any industry can then sit on any advisory panel within any government agency. Abolish the Federal Reserve, abolish the IRS, have a flat tax of 20% on corporate interests with no exceptions. Allow every company in the United States bank that cannot hold its own to go through structured bankruptcy. No more bailouts of anyone. go back and look at all executive acts as if anyone from any previous administration, including Wall Street executives, have committed any crimes, in which case do not allow them to pay any fines. The fine is irrelevant. Have them do hard prison time. And especially presidents of the United States, their full cabinets, and any member of Congress. They should be behind bars. Give debt forgiveness on all mortgage, student loans, and restore bankruptcy laws to the pre-Bush era. Take back our military bases from around the world and bring down the military-industrial complex to no more than $200 billion a year. Eliminate all but one of the intelligence agency and have a new independent and scholarly investigation of what actually happened in 9/11. Make accountable anyone who has lied as a matter of their political position that has caused adverse effects upon anyone. Restore the U.S.'s compliance with international human rights agreements and treaties regarding torture and launching wars on sovereign nations. A thorough review of our treatment of American veterans, the growing sexual harassment. Everyone who is in a position of responsibility should be fired and held accountable in any sexual harassment in the military. No more bailouts of Israel. Deal with Israel and Palestine as if they were equal. Do not allow military and industrial complexes, private corporations, to have any more input in our foreign policies. And stop drone attacks. Stop backing all despotic regimes with dismal human rights records such as Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Israel. Those are some of the things that those of us are working on, and we actually are putting coalitions together. It is all, however, a grassroots effort. And if you doubt that grassroots efforts can work, why don't you see what has happened with the public's awareness of organic versus GMO, of vaccinated versus unvaccinated, of the powers to challenge nuclear versus non-nuclear, gas fracking versus non-fracking. We're making progress. And by the way, without any fanfare or any advertisement or any publicity, there are now tens of millions of Americans who have withdrawn their support from the official liberal and official conservative ideologies and are engaging in constructive and very positive lifestyle choices. The left has defined itself by its politics. It has failed today. The right has failed equally. They are both failed concepts. They are zombies. They're just not aware they're dead. I'm Gary Noll. Those are my thoughts. I'm looking at the clock. We're at the end of this program, and I want to thank those of you who took your time to listen today. I look forward to sharing more on our next show. Now we're going to have our talkback segment. We're going to ask you to call in and share your points of view. Please do so at 888-874-4888. And also tonight on the Progressive Commentary, we're going to have a phenomenal program with one person, just one person myself, so you won't want to miss that. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Nothing like opening up a can of whoop-ass on a special day like today.
Well, this is a program that that looks for solutions, and the solution is frequently to stop being what we really aren't, you know, and be what we can be. That's the whole point of the exercise.
It almost sounds like common sense. And, you know, Gary, there's an article that came from one of your listeners, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure you were the very first journalist to bring this issue to Americans. The fact that we've moved on from the Iraq war, but the Iraqis don't really have that choice. We've now turned our backs and left the country in ruins with all the depleted uranium. Nowhere can these people live a sustainable lifestyle. It's a war zone, literally. And now you've got a crippled population that are struggling to get back on its feet. And they said, as we recall, Gary was the first journalist to bring this to our attention. And only now, in 2013, is this coming out in some of the alternative medias.
We were talking about depleted uranium polluting the environment forever, and that you're dealing in a desert area, which means that the winds are going to blow depleted uranium a long distance. In fact, one of the research scientists we filmed for the very first film I did on this said that they had monitoring stations picking up depleted uranium as far away as Germany and England. So what you have is you have doctors and hospitals routinely, daily, finding miscarriages where there's grossly deformed births of the fetuses. You see children who are dying at an astronomical level. Against any other nation in the world, these children born in Iraq are dying because of the exposure of depleted uranium.
And you showed photos.
Yes, we have 5,000 photos from just one hospital in Iraq. And the American public doesn't want to see photos like that, because it would then question, why aren't the other embedded journalists in Iraq telling us the story of what it means to be an Iraqi citizen? Whether it's Sunni or Shia or Kurd is irrelevant. They're still living in the same area, and they're all equally susceptible to radiation. You can't hide from radiation. The wealth that you have in a country or your political situation does not defend you from breathing the air, from drinking the water, from eating plants grown in soil that are contaminated. So we simply make it a non-issue. We simply decide, don't talk about it. And if you're a journalist who decides to talk about it, you'll be warned. That is part of the problem. We don't have free journalistic expression. That doesn't mean someone's holding a gun to your head. It means you hold a gun to your own head. You have something you value greater than telling the truth, or at least that truth. You have access. And without access, you're not going to get your coverage, and you will no longer be viable. So you surrender your courage to tell the truth. That's why we have it. So we have refused to acknowledge the impact of depleted uranium, and as a result, we continue to see people suffer, and they'll be suffering forever. There will never be enough lifetimes to get rid of all the depleted uranium. And we just don't want to acknowledge it, because we're still using depleted uranium on every one of those bullets and bombs, and we did it in Kosovo. And so we cannot let the world know that we're at the other end of the problems that we create. All right?
Yeah.
I want to mention, we don't have time today, but for those who are interested in joining for the 2 weeks, you can come for 1 or 2 weeks of the retreat. Because it's a holiday and there's not a whole lot of audience today, we only have 2 people in the audience who will be able to answer your questions. And this is going to be a wonderful experience. It'll be yoga, extensive every day, cooking, gourmet vegan cooking, plus raw food cooking, juicing, artist healing, meditation, including Qigong, water aerobics, personal body training. It'll be a great way to detox, rejuvenate, cleanse, learn, heal. Wonderful 1 or 2 weeks. And it starts on the 7th of July. If you want to come, and this is a fundraiser for this radio station, call this number and you'll get information. And then you can come. It's going to be filled up because I'm limiting how many people can come so everybody gets some attention. The number to call is 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. Have a nice day, everyone. I hope you join me tonight at 7 p.m., which will be with a conversation with Remarkable Mind. Now let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we're talking about the second part, actually. Dr. Gerald Horn, who was with us before, is finishing the second part of his lecture today.
Great. Okay, we look forward to that in just a moment. Please stay with us.
I got your letter yesterday. from some small town I never knew. It told me you were on your way, but not where you were going to.